Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Wednesday evening, June 15th, 2011. It is now 7:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call toll-free 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. Of course, your comments are welcome anytime to comments at libertytalkradio.com. This evening, we have our special monthly guest, Andy Sutton. He's an economist from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He is the chief strategist for Sutton Associates. And today, he will be talking about the economic malaise that we are in, why we find ourselves in it, where he thinks that we're going, and how his attitude has changed. And I believe he's on the air now. Let's get Andy on the pipe. Good evening, Andy. Is that you?
Hey, Joe, I'm on the pipe.
Okay, very good. I never know what to call it. Well, nice hearing from you again. I have to make a confession right now. I have a toy poodle in my lap, something I've never done before. This house has turned into a zoo. You know, my wife is a real dog lover, and she keeps on fostering or adopting or taking shelter in certain dogs. And this cutest little toy poodle, he doesn't never bark or anything, but he came into the studio right before I came on, and he looked at me like, you know, I want to be held. So he'll be on my lap during the entire program.
I'll try to keep that in mind.
But, you know, you got to keep the wife happy. Oh, my God. In fact, Saturday, she tried to adopt him. And we went to PetSmart, where they have the adoption agencies, and he was there in the cage clawing to get out to see my wife and I. And I told my wife, I can't do this. Get him out of the crate. We're taking him home. So I became the softy in the deal. I'll be honest with you. I told her, I can't do this. Well, Andy, enough of that.
Well, at least you're not blaming her.
Oh, no, I really can't blame her. I mean, she brings them in, but once she does, I can't let go of them. And it's horrible anyway. But all right, I guess we finished everything we needed to know about economic affairs. What else is there to talk about?
Yeah, right.
Oh, geez. Andy, I'd like to start off with a comment, and maybe you can help me with this. The world has been in economic chaos, disarray, dismembership, membership now for years. And it seems that it just keeps on hanging on. It's like someone on a life support that just will not let go. Is it just that I'm impatient, or am I seeing this the wrong way, or do I have the wrong attitude? Help me out with that.
No, you're not seeing it the wrong way at all. You have to remember, there are interests at work here, and there's people behind those interests, and those people couldn't care less about you, they couldn't care less about me, they couldn't care less to anybody who's listening to this show. What they're interested in is money and power, and they will do whatever it is that's in those best interests. And if that means killing this system off and starting tomorrow with a Globo or an Amero or a Bancor or any new currency, they will do it. On the other hand, if it means trying to force the status quo for another 8, 10, 12 years, they'll do that too. So these folks will do whatever is in their best interest. And let's make no mistake about it. There's a lot of rich people, and I don't have anything against rich people. I'm talking about filthy rich people. These guys they generally work behind the scenes. You've probably heard their names. Soros is one. I don't like the guy. Nobody I know likes the guy, and my friends don't like him either. He's a manipulator, a huckster, and he's no good. And there's a bunch of these guys out there. And their best interests are whatever their best interests are, whether they're looking to tax us for the use of carbon or tax us just for the sake of taxing us, or whatever the situation may be, that's the way it is. Now, if you don't believe me, if you think I'm crazy, if you think I need to be fitted for a tinfoil hat, I invite you to go to the IMS website. I invite you to download their white papers over the past 12, 15, 20 years, and I invite you to read them, and I invite you then to contest what I'm just saying.
Yeah.
That's the truth. So, that being said, the fact that this thing seems like it wants to continue on and on and on and on, the reason it's doing that is because apparently these people feel that it's in their best interest. Now, they did get kind of a little bit of a scare here a few years ago. I'm convinced that they were very lucky that that whole situation with Dick Fold and Lehman Brothers happened on a Friday afternoon, because I think if that had happened on a Monday, we'd be looking at a totally different world today.
Yeah.
So I think that there is the potential for these people to get caught by surprise by certain things. You know, when you create these monsters, and I'll use Frankenstein as an example, you know, that was just science fiction, obviously, whatever, but they created this thing, and then they couldn't control it.
Right.
It started going out and just devouring things, you know, or King Kong or any of these things. There's that kind of a side to this, because, you know, they might want you to think they're the smartest people on Earth, but you know what? These things happen to distort and destroy situations, and that was kind of what happened a little bit back in 2008. They were able to get it back together. They wasted an awful lot of effort, time, capital, what have you, trying to rearrange and reorganize and regroup the status quo, and they did succeed in doing that, at least on the banker Wall Street side. They never have gotten anywhere near status quo for the middle class. Did you know that right now, 2011, we've been, 2 years since that big stimulus package was passed, the $787 billion one that really had a price tag of around $3
trillion? Right.
We're 2 years separated from that now, and we have almost 2 million less people working now than we did the day that bill was passed.
Yeah.
That bill did not work. These bills do not work. The government cannot create jobs. You and I know this.
Right. Well, you know,
however,
I'm sorry, again.
Instead of saying, you know what, you guys, Cristiano, Sutton, whatever, you know, the Austrian guys, whatever, you guys were right. We're just going to go away now and let somebody else do it. No, they don't do that.
Right.
They blame what's left of the free market on the problem.
Absolutely.
They blame the free market for this. And they say, we have too much free market. There's too much crony capitalism going on, and to an extent there is, and then they've used that to enact more socialist policies, which work even less.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, but you would think after all of this time, enough people have taken economics, Eco 101, they used to call it in college, and enough people would have seen what is going on now, experienced the results of all of this, that there would have been more converts. And yet people are talking as wacky as ever. And I agree with you on your last newsletter where you said you are through. You have this epiphany, if you will, this decision that you've made personally, that you were no longer going to preach, to those people, to convince people that there is a problem. If they cannot, they have not seen it by this time, it is too late. You're going to concentrate working with those people who understand what is going on, to see if you can all, as a community, solidify your position or our position so that we can survive whatever is going to happen. And I could not agree with you more. I can't tell you how many times.
I got questioned by some people about this, and I want to make something very clear. If somebody comes to me and says, hey, Andy, you know what? I don't really understand a thing about economics, but I know in my heart that something isn't right here. they're on board as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. No, no, I understand.
Yeah, I'm
that.
Not looking.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for, you know, because I got a couple emails. People said, "Oh, so you're going to, you know, limit yourself to the guys who have economics backgrounds?" Absolutely not. All you have to do is come to the realization that, hey, there's a problem here. I want to find out more about it and how I can protect my family and myself from it. That's it. You're on.
Yeah,
very simple.
I received an email from someone that I know pretty well, a real hardcore progressive, which is strange. Her husband's a commanding officer in the Navy. I mean, so we're talking high-ranked guy. And which I think is kind of, you know, it conflicts with everything that she believes in. But it was one of the most hateful emails. Now, I had no argument with her. In fact, I've had no conversation with her. Neither have I had any discussion with her lately. And she came on blasting, you know, my radio station, Ron Paul, the libertarians, and everything. I mean, but it was hateful, saying that our only wish is to drive us to an economy that will set us back to the economy in Somalia. I mean, and it went on for, I will not go through there. But
no,
I mean,
no,
it was
no,
actual
no. That's
hate
what
mail.
They're going to do.
I know that. Yeah, exactly. But it was such hate mail, but she had nothing to back it up. And, you know, oh, and by the way, what I did do is I did invite her. This was 1 month ago, exactly 1 month ago to the day, because I invited her that day when I received the email saying, call in tonight. I'm going to have an economist bring one of your objections, you know, to the fore. And I said, and we'll discuss it. And she said, absolutely not. She says, I can write these. I cannot articulate them, you know, on the radio program. And what she was saying that, you know, I can write this stuff, turn off my computer and walk away. But, you know, I cannot defend it. That's basically what she was saying.
You want to know why that is, Joe? That's because she's been digesting too much MSM. And when you digest MSM, all you know how to do is recite talking points.
Right.
They really don't teach you how to think. And when you're on a show like this, you know, and you and I mean, we're just regular guys.
Right.
We can talk to anybody. We're not, you know, IQ 170 people or anything like that. But you have to be able to think, and you have to be able to, if you can't do that, then you're not going to be able to form an opinion. You're not going to be able to issue a coherent rebuttal. You know, and this is the kind of stuff that you get from the mainstream. They're really good at handing out talking points to these people. I can't tell you how many times people will send me an email, and it's something I heard from Larry Kudlow or Jim Cramer, and that's their argument. It's like, wait a second, you didn't think of this.
Right.
It's somebody else.
Right.
You're just parroting this to me. No, don't do that.
Yeah.
If you don't agree with what I'm saying, then form an argument and let's talk about it. You know, don't just steal somebody else's tagline and say, well, there, I disagree. Now, what do you think about that?
What I love is that when you bring up an economic principle, they'll say, oh, yeah, what about Nixon? You know what Nixon did? And you know, where did he come from? I mean, why are we talking about Nixon or whatever? You fill in the blank. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Well, what did he do? And I go, what does that have to do with it? You know, well, you know what he did? He did this, that, so you da da. And he goes on. They go, I go, you can't keep them on the subject. You cannot keep. They have to keep moving, because once they stay stationary and they have to defend the position that they're in, they're dead. They are always dead.
Yep.
And they know. I don't think they really know that, but that's the way they've been conditioned, and that's the way they've won their, quote, won their arguments, is by dancing around and making sure that the dots are always moving so you can never connect them. You know, anyway.
Exactly. I don't deal politics too much. As a matter of fact, I try to stay away from it whenever I can. But it's the same kind of principle. I don't really debate economics either. When somebody starts, you know, sprouting off about how, you know, this is, you know, we need to raise that debt ceiling and this and that, I just start pulling out history examples. Say,
yes.
Hey, what about this? Well, they talk about, you know, we need to have a, you know, banking system that can issue money at will and all this other stuff. And I'll bring up Alexander Hamilton, and, you know, we'll talk about Robert Morris. And that's usually when the eyes glaze over, and then I have to explain to these people. Nobody knows their history. The schools do a terrible job at teaching history.
Yeah.
Nobody knows it. And if you don't know it, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's true. If you haven't learned, if you aren't aware of what's happened, you're prone to the same mistakes all over again.
Right.
It's just the way it is.
Andy, we have a caller, area code 231. All right? But, If a caller, if you want to ask a question, please press 1 so I don't put you on the air and put you in a position of having to say something when you were ill-prepared. So, caller, if you want to ask a question or make a comment or disagree with us, which is fine, just press the 1 button, and then I'll know that you are ready to ask your question. I just want you to know, so we're not ignoring you, area code 231, okay? All right. Andy, I'm a little confused about natural gas. I am a big, heavy investor into natural gas and have been for some time since it plummeted down, and I've lost money since. I have not made a dime on that yet. In fact, I've lost a substantial amount of money, but I intend to hold on. Now, to me, natural gas would be about the easiest transition for our mobile fleet, which is what gasoline is used for, then without any infrastructure. We only have one major car manufacturer, and that's Honda, with their, I think, the GX, which is a compressed natural gas car. It's the Honda Civic. It's a beautiful car, relatively inexpensive, and yet you don't see natural gas being promoted at all. Now, I have my own suspicions, and I just wanted your take on it.
Well, I mean, really, what you have in with natural gas, it's been in the cellar since, I don't know, it seems like a dog's life since it was above $5 a thousand.
Right.
It was very high back in 2005 when Katrina disrupted things down in the Gulf of Mexico. It was very high again in 2008, I believe it was. And then there was a blowout of a hedge fund. It was called Amaranth Advisors. Google it, or Yahoo it, or whatever. And they were big into the natural gas space. I've had people tell me, I don't know if this is true or not, that we're still working off all those long forward contracts that Amaranth have put in place. And the market is still distorted from that. Now, what I will tell you is, I live in an area of the country where the Marcellus Shale are located.
Oh yeah, right.
And we don't have a terribly thick layer of Marcellus Shale here where I'm at, but right around us there's some very rich deposits of natural gas. And last fall, one of the big oil companies, Chevron, bought out a company called Atlas Pipelines, who was a very small player, but their biggest perk was that they had a lot of land leases in this tract that makes up the Marcellus Shale. So you have big Chevron trying to get into this natural gas play when natural gas is in the toilet.
Right.
So what does that tell you? It tells you that, you know, at least one big company, and they're not the only one, they're the best example, but a lot of these big outfits are expecting natural gas prices to go a lot higher.
Right.
A lot of these projects that are being put online, I'm being told, have break-evens in the $8.25, $8.50, and even $9 area as far as the price of nat gas needs to be to make them pay off.
Wow.
And they're provisioning, they're getting ready to drill these things. So there's an expectation that prices are going to be going much higher. Now, what could trigger that? Yeah, sure, another hurricane. I don't know if I'd bet several hundred million dollars or $1 billion of the shareholders' money on hurricane prospects, but what I would bet it on is the fact that the Saudis are blowing sunshine when they tell us they can pump 11.5 or 12 million barrels of oil a day.
Right.
That I would bet on.
Right.
Well, and I think that's exactly what you're seeing here.
Okay. Well,
you're seeing people positioning for this point in time, and it might be even this fall, when all of a sudden the Saudis are requested to do all this pumping that they claim they can do, and they just shoot a blank.
Right.
And they whiff.
Well,
they can't do it. And
then
you're going to see things really scramble.
I increased my holdings substantially when Chevron went in. I said, when Chevron goes in, and they said, oh, we know there's nothing in natural gas now, but they said the price is so compelling, and we're a long-term holder. We're getting in now. We're not going to get in when the price is high. And our 231 area code, just press the 1 button. Let's see what this person has to say. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
From Michigan.
Michigan.
Big Rapids.
And your name, first name, please.
Steve.
Steve, you have a comment, question, or criticism for us today?
I got a couple of questions.
Surely.
first of all, I want to thank you for hosting this show. And I want to tell Andy, I first heard him on Contrary Investors Cafe. And I appreciate him being having that show and everything. And that's where I listened to Zapata George. First met him. I really missed Zapata George.
You do know he passed away last year.
And he's going to be really missed.
Yeah, he is, definitely.
Anyway, I got a couple of questions. The first question is, when this reset hits, the dollar defaults or whatever, will stock certificates be worth anything? Do you have to have them in your physical possession for them to be worth something?
Well, that's an interesting question because as of 2009, I believe it was, they changed the rules on issuing stock certificates. You actually cannot get stock certificates for most stocks anymore. Several of the foreign jurisdictions will still issue them, but your title and transfer companies and clearinghouses, whatever, you cannot get stock certificates. Now, if you had certificates from before, you obviously would still have possession of those. But they cannot be gotten from the major U.S. brokerages anymore in almost all cases. So
I've taken Zapata George's suggestion and bought mostly, most of mine is in Canadian companies.
Right.
And I one time Fidelity did say that I could get certificates if it was not in my IRS or IRA account.
Yeah, you should call them about that because, like I said, some of the foreign jurisdiction stocks you can still get certificates for. Most of the companies that George talked about, and I'm just going from memory here, most of those guys are no longer in their original form. Most of those were trusts when he talked about them.
Correct.
So you're going back to 2007, 2008. And most of those guys rolled over here back at the earlier part of this year, back to just a plain old vanilla corporate structure. That should not affect whether or not you can get a certificate. That would be a call to Fidelity to see what they can do on that. Like I said, for most U.S. stuff, forget it.
Are they worth anything? And is your stock going to be worth anything when the dollar defaults?
Well, basically what's going to happen is there's going to have to be some kind of a currency. More than likely what will happen is it'll get jammed in with some other kind of I don't know if it would be global at that point or if they would do it, like what they did with the euro, regionalize it. There's got to be some kind of currency. You can't really have an economy without a money, whether it's a metallic coin money or paper money that's actually backed by something. Whatever the situation is, you need monies in an economy. So you're going to get some kind of a money. The caveat here is what you're going to have to give up in that transfer. So in other words, here's the situation. Say you had $100 in your bank account, and on that particular day before, you can go to McDonald's and you can buy 100 cheeseburgers off the dollar menu with that $100. After the currency realignment takes place, you might only be able to get 75 cheeseburgers with the Bancor or the Amero or whatever they happen to call it. That's usually what happens. People lose money in the switch from the old currency to the new currency. And it's always sold to the people as well. This was going down the toilet anyway, so we had to make this worthwhile for anybody else to want to get involved with it. And by the way, you just gave up 25%. Thank you very much for playing Federal Reserve Monopoly. That's usually about how it works.
Steve, may I ask?
If I had 100 shares of a stock, of a company, I'd still have 100 shares. It'd be just in a different amount, correct?
Right, right. You'd still have your 100 shares, presumably, but instead, say those shares were $10 a piece the day before where you'd have $1,000 invested in that particular company the next day, and using the same examples with McDonald's, your shares might only be worth $7.50 or 7 Amaros and 50 half Amaros or whatever they're doing, whatever the nomenclature is. You would take...
Everybody be in the same boat.
Right. You take some sort of a haircut.
Yeah.
My next question is,
Steve,
of the IRA, 401ks and that. When I retired, I took a lump sum and I put it into it and invested it. And I think they said it was a 72T account. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Would they do the government? Would that be seizable by the government if they wanted to do that?
Well, I mean, really, if they want to seize an account, they can seize any account.
Any account.
IRAs are a little bit more difficult because it's a contract between you and your custodian. So if your custodian is Fidelity, for example, using your last example, you have a custodial agreement between yourself and Fidelity. They are holding your assets in custody for you. So if the government goes in and steals those assets, somebody's going to get left holding the bag. Now, whether it's going to be Fidelity or they just say, well, we're just going to violate all these contracts, I would imagine they would have a harder time with retirement accounts just because of that feature that's inherent to retirement accounts. A brokerage account, just a plain old vanilla brokerage account, yes, the monies are held in custody. Yes, I mean, they don't do share certificates anymore, but yes, I'm using double quotes here, the shares would be held in custody, but they're a lot more accessible to the government. But what I would think the lowest hanging fruit for the government would be public pension funds, funds like the TSP, Civil Service Retirement Plan. A lot of these state pensions are easy pickings because they can loot the cash and replace them with treasuries, and it's done fairly easily. They already did it, Social Security. I mean, they took that big retirement plan, took the money out of it. It was a trust fund, and they took the money out of it, and they put in treasuries. So, I mean, we have history for this already. So, that would seem to me to be the first order of business as far as they needed to recapitalize the treasury. They go after public pension funds. That would make the most sense. At least from a legality standpoint, and that type of thing.
All right. Well, thank you very much for answering my question.
You're welcome, and I'm glad you listened on CIC. I'm glad you're listening here, and thank you for calling in. We appreciate that.
Yeah, and Steve.
I got one more time.
I can't
hear you on the computer, so I don't know why.
Steve, could you hear me? Steve, could you hear me? Steve, could you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Could you hold on that question for 1 second, please? We are late with our station identification. Don't go away, please.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host of Liberty Talk Radio. With us this evening, we're pleased to have economist Andy Sutton. We're just talking about economic issues. Whichever you are concerned with, please call in and ask a question. Our toll-free number is 888-773-4496. 888-773-4496. Your comments are always welcome. Comments at libertytalkradio.com. Now, folks, I know a lot of people say, well, I would have called in, but I didn't want to interrupt the conversation. That's not where it's at. Please, we are here for you. You can call in if you want. Listen on your telephone for a while. When you feel the break is appropriate or inappropriate, just press the one button and we'll put you on the air. Okay, Steve, your last question, please. Or your next question.
I'm having trouble hearing you off the computer. I'm at your site and everything, but I can't hear it.
You cannot hear me?
Right.
Andy, can you hear
Correct.
Me?
Correct. I'm not hearing the show at all.
I can hear you fine.
Okay.
But I'm just wondering,
I can't get you off the computer, though. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for. And Steve, if you'd like a Liberty Talk Radio t-shirt, I'll send you one free of charge. Just send me email to comments at libertytalkradio.com with a mailing address, and don't forget your t-shirt size, okay?
Great.
All right. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you, Steve.
Bye.
I'm not sure if he heard me. I'm not sure if he heard you. I hopefully heard
call.
You, but I think he heard you on the telephone, but he could not hear. Once he converted over to the computer, he had a problem with his volume. But excellent questions, though.
That was a good call. I about, begged, borrowed, stole, pleaded with people when I sent out my dispatch to my email list for people to call in. And I don't know what his email address is, but I kind of recognize him from the CIC days. So hopefully he was one of the ones that got that plea.
I hope so.
That was great. I mean, those are some good questions that people are starting to have. You know, when you think about, all right, this is probably what's going to be in our either immediate or not so immediate future, given the fact that the only way the dollar is going to get any kind of a bid here at all is if the euro just tanks. And
right.
If the euro tanks, it's going to be because one of these countries went bankrupt. And if one of these countries goes bankrupt and defaults, we're going to have bigger problems. Because I'm going to tell you what, our Wall Street guys, they're big in Greece, they're big in France, they're big in Britain. These guys are all woven together, and when one goes down, they all go down.
Right. We're talking about the proverbial house of cards, aren't we, Andy?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
You know,
call it a house of toilet paper.
You know, in your latest Sensible Investor, and folks, I really suggest that, highly recommend that you subscribe to Andy Sutton's Sensible Investor. Very thorough. Even someone like me, who's a real thick-skulled person, could understand what is going on. It has helped me immensely, and it's given me a focus, and it's a compass for me as to where we are going. I think a big problem that most people have today is that they hear all this gobbledygook. I know when I listen to the television, I'm home during the day or something, and my wife says, fold the laundry, and I'll fold the laundry in front of the TV set. You know, after a half hour, I have a headache. I have no idea what anyone said. They just gibber, gibber, jabber, and it makes no sense. You need to purge yourself of that. I need to promise that I will never do that again for the rest of my life. But when you read something that's logical and it gives you an idea, it gives you a foundation from where we are, where we're going, at least you'll know what to do. So look up his website at sutton-associates.net, sutton-associates.net, and subscribe to the Sensible Investor. You'll be glad you did, as they say. Andy, in the Sensible Investor, there was a map, and I'm looking for it feverishly, and it had the debt to GDP ratio of various countries, you know, around Europe, and most of them weren't all that bad. Here they are. Jesus, one of the front pages. That's why I couldn't find it. For example, we have here Spain, 53.2%. Now, I thought Spain was on the shaky chopping block, and yet their debt to GDP is only 53.2%. Ireland, which is another basket case, is only 64%. Well, we're worse off than those countries by far. I mean, even if you take just the government numbers that are filtered and don't count all the off-balance sheet items. Some of them are Austria, 66%. Slovenia, 35.9%. Now, Greece is 115%. Now, how come Greece is 115, Spain is less than half that, and they seem to both be in the same boat?
Well, you know, the interesting thing, I mean, now let's just frame this for people who don't have the issue in front of them. These were 2009 numbers, so they're a little bit dated, but it's the idea there is to paint the picture.
Yeah.
You take a look at Germany at 73.2, it's higher than
That's
Spain.
Right.
And Germany has been supporting that entire currency block pretty much since the day one.
Right.
The interesting thing here, and I think this is what people really have to understand, Greece, 115%. It's still around 115%, 118%. It depends whose numbers you listen to. You take a look at our situation. Our actual stated, what we're willing to admit, public debt is somewhere in the neighborhood of $14 trillion and change, and our GDP is right around there as well. So, I mean, we're floating real close to 100%.
Right.
But, and I just saw an article about this, and I'm going to try and dig it up on my blog while I talk here about this, because I think it is really important that people understand what exactly is going on in terms of just the deception involved here. Somebody quoted this a couple of weeks ago, and they quoted numbers that were 4 years old. Yeah, here we go. I found it. The federal government's financial condition deteriorated rapidly last year, far beyond the $1.5 trillion in new debt taken on to finance the budget. Data a USA Today analysis shows the government added $5.3 trillion in new financial obligations in 2010, largely for retirement programs. This brings to a record $61.6 trillion the total of financial promises not paid for. All right, now $61.6 trillion GDP is 14.5. Call it 15, make it even. We're at 400%.
Right.
Of GDP.
I read that article, yeah.
All right, based on their study.
Yeah.
Their study is using numbers, or either that or they've got a flawed methodology, I don't know which one, that are at least 5 years old.
Well, that was on the front page of USA. I remember seeing that article.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, front page of USA.
Numbers,
shocked the heck out of me.
The numbers I have, and I trust these numbers because I have my own methodology that agrees with these numbers, we had $65.9 trillion or thereabouts back in 2006. And the last run on those numbers was somewhere around 228, the ones I did.
Yeah.
228. So you take that and figure that back into the 14, and you can easily see that we are several orders of magnitude in a bigger hole than Greece is. And Greece is in riots. They are having to deal with austerity, and they're talking about an outright default because they don't want to kill the euro. So what are they going to do? Greece cannot print its own money. It does not have a treasury. It gave away its national sovereignty to that euro nonsense back in 1997. So they're in a box, and this box is causing all kinds of problems globally. So you imagine that little itty-bitty country over there is going to cause all these problems. You've got at least 5, 6, maybe 10 more countries in Europe that are stacked up right behind them. Then you have the United Kingdom. Then you have the United States. We are not going anywhere here economically.
Now, you know, one country you don't hear much about these days is Russia. Back 20 years ago, it was total default, and, you know, the ruble was worth absolutely nothing, and, you know, the collapse of Soviet Empire at that time in 89, the Russian ruble went with it. Has that improved its position in the marketplace?
They're probably, they're a lot better off than they were in 1989. I mean, that goes without saying. Russia they still have a lot of problems. You don't get quite as much information on them. They're not as free-flowing. They're kind of like China in a lot of ways, that they don't talk too much about the issues at home, but they seem to be purring along. And what they do have is rich natural gas reserves and some oil, and they are cutting deals with China and other people to secure long-term provisioning of those materials to those other countries. So, you know, they are engaging in economic transactions. They're using their, core competencies, if you will, or their gifts based on their geographic location, as it were, to position themselves. So you've got a situation where they're kind of a quiet player in this whole thing. You've got a couple of the quiet players in this whole thing. Iceland was another very quiet player, and I don't know if the listeners know this, but the Iceland people actually voted last year, I think it was, to basically tell the international bankers to take a very, very long walk off a short pier in regards to getting paid back for the bailout of Iceland's banks, because basically they told them, hey, you made the mess, you guys clean it up.
No, and I agree. I don't know, why don't they just say, hey, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles. You know, you took a gamble, you lost, that's it. I don't know why everyone has to bail. Well, everyone's bailing each other out, and the bailors don't have any more money than the bailees.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I heard our Congress or president or both or whatever, they're talking about bailing out Greece now.
Oh, that's great.
Are you kidding me? What is this, like a carnival or something?
You know, it just seems that everyone's broke and everyone's helping each other out. I mean, this whole thing defies, you know, any sort of logic. And if you try to think through it, it'll drive you nuts. Other than there's massive manipulation. And someday something will happen. And what that is, no one knows. And it'll be the thing that tips that first first domino over. And it's all over. And they're not going to be able to stop it. I saw a film clip of that movie Rollover that was made in 1981 when the Saudis decided to cash in, you know, or not accept the U.S. dollar, petrodollar anymore for oil. And it showed how it was worldwide calamity and all that. Quite an interesting movie. I think they should replay that movie. I think it's very apropos today.
Sure it is. Well, you have a lot of that going on through OPEC now. You know, there's a lot of these places, they don't want to accept the dollar.
Right.
Iran, you know, has been kind of labeled as being this, that, or the other thing. And, you know, a lot of that started when they said, hey, this is back in 2006. There were some subtle news articles, quiet. That story made the book censored, 06, as far as the top 25 news stories that were had the lid slammed on them in that year, that they wanted to start an oil bourse and they were going to trade for euros.
Right.
And it wasn't long after they did that that all of a sudden there was nukes in Iran. And
right.
It's just, this is the way it's been. You know, anytime one of these countries doesn't want to participate in dollar hegemony, all of a sudden they have weapons of mass destruction. You know, and
right.
People are getting sick and tired of this.
Yeah.
People are starting to catch on to that to some degree. The ones that are awake are starting to put the pieces together and say, hey, you know what? We see where this is going. You know, we're not all stupid. We get it. And it's getting very old, and it's going to be time for these guys to change tactics before too long. The dollar's days are numbered.
Yeah. You know, and I don't want I don't want to get into conspiracy stuff and all this other stuff, but, you know, JFK, you know, signed an executive order to do away with the Federal Reserve. He met a demise. Saddam Hussein decided he wasn't going to accept petrodollars anymore. He had weapons of mass destruction, met with his demise. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad now wants to do the same thing, is doing the same thing, not accepting petrodollars, and all of a sudden they have nuclear capabilities and it's going to destroy the world, so we need to attack them. And now I hear that Libya, Gaddafi, one of his goals on his agenda was to unite the Arab nations under a common currency, a dinar, backed by gold. Now, he's been in power for 41 years, and just the past few months, he's become a real bad guy, you know? And you just have to look, and you got to go, you know, I don't want to get into this conspiracy stuff and wacko stuff or anything like that, but, you know, you see this over and over. I mean, how many times do you have to see this until you say, you know, that it's something other than they did it because they hate our freedom? You know, when are we going to wake up from that?
Right. Yeah, I always tell people, follow the money. And I think that really kind of helps you frame these kinds of things. You know, one time, all right, two times, yeah, maybe it's a coincidence. I'm not really a big believer in coincidences. Yeah, but when you see this, like you said, when you see this stuff happening over and over and over again, it says, all right, you know, maybe we got some smoke here, and usually where there's smoke, there's fire, and all that kind of good stuff. But now think about all we've been talking about here for the last, oh, I don't know, 15 minutes since Steve left us. How do you see any job creation coming out of any of this?
Yeah, that's when I have conversations with people. They say, well, things are getting better. I said, to where, from where, on what? And they can never answer it.
Yeah.
I said, just from what? You know, they say, well, manufacturing productivity is an all-time high. I said, yes, you know why? Because we have fewer people working in factories, and we have been investing massively in technology, and that technology is fast and efficient and et cetera, and inexpensive. And I went to we do industrial health testing at all sorts of plants in Oklahoma, Kansas, and Arkansas, and even Texas. And I've been in every conceivable manufacturing plant that you can think of. I went to one. It was a brick company, and they had these massive, massive robots. They looked like Transformers. Now, I'm talking about 8 years ago I was there. And you walk on a catwalk that's totally enclosed by plexiglass for protection. And these massive robots are making bricks, basically, and piling bricks up. And when they move, they look just like real people, but they're like 5 times or 10 times the size of a person. And they just go, I mean, at unbelievable fast pace. But the way they move, they look real. It's frightening, you know? You could imagine how many people they would need on that floor to do that work. And the argument that, well, yeah, you're going to need somebody to build the technology, and the answer is no, not exactly. You have technology that is really making the technology. In fact, if you want to know where we're going, look at some of the old science fiction movies that we thought was just science fiction. They portend our future.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Well, see, that's kind of like the productivity trap. You know, everybody says, well, you know, we can grow the economy only by increasing productivity. And that is true to a certain extent. There's a function in economics, it's called the Cobb-Douglas function, that basically mixes labor, capital, and productivity and comes out with output. And the way the formula is arranged, and it's a very valid construct. You know, if you start adding, you figure, well, we'll just crank capital into this situation. We'll leave labor and productivity unchanged. Well, obviously, when you get to a certain point, you get the rate of diminishing returns, and output starts growing less and less and less the more capital you put in. Same thing for labor, and guess what? Same thing for productivity.
Right.
So, you know, you can triple productivity. You can make productivity go up 10, 20, 50, 100-fold, but you're getting less and less and less bang for your buck out of it.
Right.
You need the combination of the three things to really get genuine economic output.
Right.
We totally have tried for years now to sell this idea of growth based on productivity, and we ran into a brick wall.
Right.
I mean, this technology is great, but if you have all these people that are now unemployed and the government has to borrow trillions of dollars from foreign central banks and the Federal Reserve and all these other institutions and what have you, just to pay unemployment benefits, how productive is that?
Absolutely. You know, and it seems that everything we are doing is not really even keeping us level. It seems to be destructive. It seems to be destroying whatever we have. I was at a...
It is.
My wife and I went to a...
You bring up a good point.
I'm sorry.
The every dollar that the government borrows now used to create a dollar in growth, and now they have to borrow a dollar, and I think the last numbers I saw, they were getting 38 or 39 cents worth of growth. So you're borrowing a dollar to get 38 or 39 cents, and it's even worse when you consider that you have to pay the dollar back in interest.
Right.
So we're actually destroying capital by borrowing now. We've turned that upside down on its head. And again, how are we going to create jobs in that kind of an environment?
Right. My wife and I went to Kansas City on vacation for a few days, and we visited took a tour of the Harley-Davidson plant. We just, you know, blew off a week, you know, and we went to the museums and all this other good stuff and really enjoyed ourselves. It was a real relaxing week. We haven't been away for years. And I was speaking to one of the head tour guy, you know, the coordinator of all the tours, and I asked him about how Harley-Davidson was doing, where their plants were. And he mentioned that there was a plant, and I just don't remember which state it was in, but they were building, he said, things are going pretty well, but they were going through some consolidations, and they were doing some modernizations, and they decided to build a plant, and I can't remember which state it was in, but the union contracts were so restrictive, and they had already had a plant there they were going to add on, was so restrictive there, they closed the whole place down and moved to another state, which was a union state, by the way, but it was a reasonable union contract where they could work with the unions and produce a quality piece of merchandise. And so the restrictions actually killed hundreds and hundreds of high-paying jobs at one location, and then, of course, they consolidated into a new location. I'm sure that the net was fewer jobs altogether.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically, you know, how a lot of this works. You know, it's like the government borrowed $787 billion. Total price tag was somewhere around $3.1, $3.2 trillion, if I remember CBO's numbers correctly. And this was going to be a bill that was going to create or save jobs. And now we have this term create or save. I never quite figured out how you quantify jobs that were saved. But anyway, the biggest hiring spree that we had, or the biggest two, in the last 2 years since that bill was passed was the census and McDonald's.
Yeah. That's right.
So what does that tell you? You know, the census, obviously, they were temporary jobs, and there was a lot of shenanigans there to make them look like they were private sector jobs, and they really weren't. You know, and then there was even some more shenanigans with the McDonald's hiring day back in April 19th, I believe it was, because some of those people, you know, responded affirmatively in the household survey. So some of those jobs were really counted on the household survey for April, but the media said, no, none of them were. They were all going to be counted in May because they knew May was going to be a bad month anyway. So we'll just put the McDonald's thing in there, and we'll lump all those one-offs together and just write it off.
You know,
that was the idea. This labor market, I'm going to tell you something else. This BLS, this Bureau of Labor Statistics over there, they are the biggest bunch of shapeshifters I've ever come across in my whole life. You know, I had six of their people on email over the course of, I don't know, I guess it was 2 or 3 weeks. This was about a year ago, trying to get an answer from somebody on how they come up with their birth-death adjustment each month.
Yeah.
And you know, and these people are staff economists inside the Department of Labor, not one of them could tell me the methodology that they use to come up with that number. Not one of them.
That's amazing.
You know, and if you're being attacked like that constantly by people who are picking at that number, you would think, hey, if I've got a valid methodology for doing this, I'm going to have it on the front page of every paper in the country so everybody knows that I know what I'm doing.
Right, right.
They just won't tell you.
Yeah. Well, Andy, I want to shift gears just a little bit. We have a few more minutes to go. There are many financial pundits who are saying that we are going to see a very, very, very low stock market. Some are even claiming to go down to 3,300 on the Dow. They don't see any hope for it. It's just going to keep on sliding down. It's been propped up too long, and it should have dropped down well below the 65 or whatever, 6,500 back in 2008. What is your take on that?
Well, my take on that is pretty simple. The Federal Reserve is either going to do another batch of quantitative easing or it's not. My opinion, at this point, they've conditioned the economy to become basically a handout addict. You know, that's how it's set up. Government programs, unemployment, because there aren't jobs or guys working at half of what they were working at before, that's what they've created here. And that needs constant stimulus. It needs constant massaging. It needs constant attention. So they're either going to do QE, plus the fact that there's no buyers for these bonds. Nobody wants our bonds. Our bonds are junk.
Yeah.
You know, people rush into them. You know, when the Greek thing ignites and everybody says, oh, USA is a flight to quality. And no, that's the Federal Reserve doing its last round of quantitative easing on an advantageous day and making it look good.
Yeah.
Nobody wants these bonds. The bonds aren't worth anything. The only thing worse than a dollar today is the promise of one 30 years from now.
Right.
So you've got that situation going on. So this is what the way I see it. We're going to get to 3,300 or 2,500. I said 2,500. We're going to get there in either real terms or nominal terms. If these guys stop this easing and we get back into a 2008-ish kind of liquidation type situation, we'll get there in actual nominal terms. If they decide to hyperinflate and continue the easing and expand it and do all these types of things to try to chase the unfunded liabilities and all of that kind of stuff, then we're going to get there, but it's going to be in real terms.
Yeah.
You might have a nominal stock value, you know, Dow Jones of, you know, 21,000, 22,000 or whatever, but when you look at it in terms of adjusted for inflation and purchasing power, it will be back where it started. It will be the 90% haircut from what we had back in the 1930s. I firmly believe that.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of what the screen says or whether we have to do it in terms of purchasing power. But my opinion is we're getting there.
Well, you know, Jim, who is a regular listener and a subscriber to The Sensible Investor, he also has a very large portion or a portion of his portfolio in precious metal mining stocks. And his question is, with the Dow going down, of course, initially all the commodity stocks go down in multiples of the Dow, but the price of gold and silver is going to maintain its value, obviously, or even increase in value. What he wants to know is what's going to happen to the mining stocks. Are they going to die like all the other industrial companies, or will people eventually gravitate to the mining stocks because gold and silver will be considered the haven of security?
Well, you know, I think initially they're going to go the way of the stocks.
Yeah.
But I think once this thing gets far enough along, we haven't seen that decoupling yet. I think once this thing gets far enough along and people really start to understand, and I'm not talking Americans, because Americans, by and large, don't get it. But a lot of these Europeans, say what you want about them, but they have a much better understanding, in
Absolutely.
My opinion, than we do here. Well, you're going to see a push towards, you know, some kind of a new currency system, and it's going to have to be backed by something. Otherwise, you're not going to get people to buy into it.
Right.
So whether they use gold, whether they use silver, whether they use a little bit of both, that remains to be seen. I think you're going to see a lot of demand for both of those metals moving forward, and I think that is going to push a lot of these mining companies that have the producing mines or have the proved probable reserves and you know, and actually have the feasibility studies and that kind of thing. I think you're going to see those guys do quite a bit better than the average stock.
Yeah.
Now, these little micro exploration companies, you know, where they bought 25 acres and they're sticking drill bits in the ground and they don't have anything, those I'd stay away from.
Right.
You don't know what's going to happen with those.
Yeah.
I'm talking about people that know they have gold or silver in the ground.
Right, the gold corpse and the gold field.
Yeah, they're in the process of pulling it out of the ground or whatever, or making arrangements to do so. Those are the kind of plays I think in the long run are going to do better. Now, having said that, in the short run, they could really get the daylight speed out of them. They have been. This is the same kind of thing that went on back in 2008.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, the price
of
bullion went down a lot more
right.
in 2008. But, you know, the gold stocks went down, the general stock market went down, the whole thing went down together. Here, you have a situation, even with the CME playing their games, with the margin requirements and whatnot, you're seeing gold in particular really hold its own.
Yeah, it's
silver's been hit a little bit, but they haven't been able to really do much below $34 an ounce on silver, even
right.
with another margin hike now.
Right.
So the metals stay up. I think it helps the miners. There's a lot of demand for the metals. You know, CME is trying to basically cover for the COMEX, whose number of deliverable ounces people buy the newsletter. I got a chart right in there of what's happened to their ounces for delivery of silver. COMEX is running out. So is the London Bullion Market Association. Their warehouses, same deal. These guys are playing these paper games. They're trying to cover this up, trying to make it look all good, like everything's normal. It's not. We're winning the battle, Joe. We're taking their metal away from them, and they're starting to get upset.
Right.
They're starting to get scared,
right.
and they're changing the rules. We are winning that game.
Yeah, okay, that makes me feel good. You know, whenever I feel really, really good, and I say, I shouldn't be feeling good, I listen to Gerald Celente for a while.
You know what, though? Gerald will even tell you the same thing. We are winning that game.
Yeah, right. I just love
this. A guy by the name of Jim Sinclair, he'll tell you the same thing. We are winning that game. We need to keep it up. Take their metal away from them.
Right. And that's very, very true.
However you can.
That's very, very true. You know, an old dog like me continues to do the same thing. I'm like Pavlov's dog, you know. When I get change, even small change, I put it in little holders, you know, the quarters, dimes, and nickels. Not nickels. I never give nickels away, but quarters and dimes. And, you know, I'll go to the coin store and say, you know, here's $18. What do you got? And I get a silver dollar, a silver quarter, and a silver dime, and I go home. I figured I've done my part. I've been doing that, though, for 12 years now.
That's Right. Well, you know what was happening? People were going into these markets and they were buying a futures contract or a mini futures contract. And then what they were doing is they were standing and taking delivery. And these warehouse guys in the cartel said, hey, we can't have that. We're losing our metal. Our metal is going south.
That's right.
So what they did is they started making it harder and harder for these little guys to stay in there and keep doing that. By raising margin requirements. Do you think J.P. Morgan cares if the margin requirements go up?
Oh,
they couldn't care less. They have all the money they need.
That's
They're
right.
after the little guys who
right.
are taking delivery. Yes, CME. Yes, Federal Reserve. Yes, LBMA. We know what you're up to.
Right.
You are losing this game.
Right.
You are losing.
Andy, we've been
And I take joy in it. I have a smile on my face, though.
That's great. You made me feel really good. Andy, we've been on the air for an hour now. Would you like to recap for us and give our listeners some information about your services and how you can be reached?
Well, obviously, you've heard some things that I'm passionate about over the last hour. The metals I'm very passionate about. One of the things we do for subscribers is help you to get set up in metals if you're not already. I get too many calls from people that tell me that they paid $10,000 for $6,500 worth of gold,
yeah.
you know, or silver or whatever. People are paying too much, and they're getting bad deals. And it puts a bad taste in your mouth because then you don't want to go back and do it again.
Right.
Don't do that. Call me. I can help you find a good dealer, a reputable dealer, one that's not going to jerk you around or play games with you. They're going to give you a fair price. I will tell you what a fair price is. Because I'm in these markets every day, so I know what's fair. I know if somebody's trying to rip you off, you can save a lot of money. And then after that, once you've learned the ins and outs, you go and do it for yourself.
Right.
And you do it that way. That's one thing we do. Obviously, we've got the newsletter that has economic topics in it, and I'm putting actionable items in there. We talked about the situation with this. You know, U.S. default here, whether it's going to be hyperinflation or whether they're just going to pull the plug and default and how that's going to look on Main Street. And I put in some no-nonsense things that people can do, and it's easy stuff. It's nothing crazy, nothing, you know, out of this world or anything like that. There are some simple things you can do to protect yourself. So you put that kind of thing in there. And if you do have paper assets, we can work with those too and, you know, give you advice on diversifying out of those if that's your comfort zone or, you know, doing the best we can to put something bulletproof or as bulletproof as we can get it
right.
Together for you to get a reasonable return, nothing crazy. I think people are taking way too much risk now.
Right.
And they really need to get into risk management mode, and that's one of my specialties. It's one of the areas I focused on in grad school and that sort of thing is risk management. So, you know, that's kind of a little niche that we have. So that's basically what we do for people. We've got the website. You gave it out kindly, www.sutton-associates.net, or you can call us on the phone, 888-633-5420.
Yeah. And if you think that the price of gold is too high, go on the Internet and go to YouTube and listen to watch a clip or a trailer of Rollover, and one of the lines is, buy gold at $2,000 an ounce, that's too high. And the response was, by tonight, that'll be cheap. So it may not be tonight, but we know where it's going, Andy. That's unfortunate.
That's a good take-home message.
Yeah.
$2,000, and we're not even there yet. I mean, we're looking at, you know, $1,600 for an ounce coin. That might seem like a lot now. It certainly does when you compare it to a couple of years ago when it was $700.
Right.
But I'm going to tell you what, when it's $5,000, not if, when it's $5,000, $1,600 is going to look cheap.
Absolutely. And Andy, will you accept our invitation to return the third Wednesday of next month once again?
Absolutely. I really enjoy doing this.
I do,
and
too.
And it's an honor and privilege to come on here and talk with you. And I'm going to really plea, and I'm going to try and shame some more people into calling in last month, or next month, I should say. It was good hearing from Steve, if he is who I think he is,
right.
And, you know, I really appreciated that. but we'll have to really work on trying to get more people to call in. But you and I don't seem to have a problem doing an hour on our own either.
No, not at all. Okay, Andy, thank you so much, and I'll be speaking to you again, and good night.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. Good talking to you. Right. Thanks for having me on. We'll talk next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Oh, geez. I just love having him on the program.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio.
I just love having him on the program. You know, there's a guy who...
Gotta be careful what I say, because I might slip.
Boy, that's raspy.
Can't let her know how I feel, she knows.
Maybe it's just my microphone or something on my headphone. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support. We'd like to thank you for listening in. Ranch Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ron Paul has a sign in his desk that says, "Don't steal." The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.